Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, January 22nd. I'm Ray Graff. Today it's gardening, and we welcome back to the studio two guests. We have Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and horticulturalist Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery. They are here in the studio. I could not be more excited to see them. By the end of the show, well, I'll be happy to get rid of them. But for now, this is exciting stuff. Hey, if you have a gardening question, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Adventures in Live Radio. Here we go. It's Greg and Bob in the studio. Your gardening calls coming up after the news. Good afternoon. Once again, it's Vox Pop on WAMC, and this is The Gardening Show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining me today, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery. If you have a gardening question, this is a great time. Now, the lines are already loading up. If you get a busy signal, just wait until you hear somebody hang up, and then, you know, that's the time to call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And they are also first come, first served, but we'll do the best we can. Once again, the number is 800-348-2551. Live in-person gardeners, I am very thrilled. Greg Ward, welcome back, sir.
Hey, thanks for having us. It's really fun to see you, Ray. Yeah. I almost forgot what you look like.
Lucky you, but now you remember, so that's a shame. And we were talking before the show started. You didn't close once during the pandemic, huh?
No, we were pretty lucky. We were deemed essential pretty much right away, and it was good for everybody because people just needed to garden.
And so many people did. I mean, if you look at the social media, people did a couple things. One, they baked bread, and often not that well. And then the other thing they did was garden. And Bob Graves, now you guys closed just for a little while.
Just so we figured out how to handle what we were doing. But I don't think we've ever been busier than last year and this year. I mean, it's phenomenal how many people got in. We were worried last year everybody would get into gardening and say, oh, I don't want to do that anymore. Yep. But this year they all came back.
Yes. Yeah, they're very happy.
Well, I mean, the gardening projects that I have seen in mine, including my own wife is putting new gardens in the front. And it's, you know, I slow down a little bit. We have plenty of time, right? We have 10, 15 more years at least before we kick the bucket. Yeah, this email from James. And this was written quite a while ago. I have lilacs that are more trees than bushes, 15 feet tall plus. Can I cut them back to the ground so they become bushes?
Well, what we'd recommend is to cut back the older canes, right?
Yeah.
Take back the older wood right down to the ground and let it kind of rejuvenate itself.
Usually if there's half a dozen big stems, take out half of them or maybe a little less and then see what happens.
But 15 feet's pretty big.
Yeah, it's not unusual for a French lilac. Yeah, it's pretty
normal. It's nice old one, I'm sure.
Yeah. And then there are more questions from James. Usually it's one to a customer, but I'm benevolent today. What do I do now with crabgrass and quackgrass? Or should I wait until... What's quackgrass?
Yeah, it's basically a field grass, right?
Yeah, it's the one that in your garden, Ray, when you're out there weeding, that is sort of interconnected to itself. It runs around and you pull up one and you keep finding it over here. You trace it over.
Okay.
But with crabgrass, it's really hard to get rid of it now. You use a pre-emergent earlier, but it's already up. So I would wait and do a pre-emergent later. Or, you know, the main thing is to get your grass growing and healthy and improve the soil and try to out-compete the crabgrass over time.
It's usually hard to tell that you have crabgrass at this point in June. I mean, it's green. It mows pretty well. So
this has always been my point. It's like, I don't care what you call it. It's green. If I mow it, no one knows the difference until it grows a little more. By the way, speaking of grass, and I digress from James' email here for a moment. So we got this walkway. Did it ourselves, front walk. It's got some moon dust or whatever they call it and some pea gravel, and then we put some slate down. So the grass comes up. Now, I have heard tell that I could put some really high-test vinegar in the stone area and keep the grass out. Yeah. Obviously, it's not the vinegar you're making a salad dressing with. Where do I get such a vinegar?
Yeah, we both sell it, I think.
Yeah. Fadigan's is closer.
Right? Yeah, what you get in the grocery store is usually 5%. Yeah. What's sold as a herbicide is 20%.
Okay, that's the stuff.
So, but you have to be a little careful because that's an acid and it's volatile.
Right.
So once you put it down in that area, you kind of want to stay out of there for a little while.
Well, what do you mean?
It burns.
Will it burn the stones?
No, your nose.
Oh, well, I'll just dump it on. It's fine.
And it's actually probably one of the best uses for vinegar because it will, even though it's, you know, it's going to wear off, it will persist for a little while, too.
Okay, good. And then last question from James. And James, I apologize for delaying this. How do I get thyme to spread out? That's T-H-Y-M.
Oh, okay, yeah,
Not one of those universe dilation things. No, go ahead.
So if he's using creeping thyme in his walkway, and of course not putting down any vinegar, but he's weeded out the weeds and then he puts thyme in there, as it grows, you can certainly divide some of it. You know, it'll take a year or so to expand, and then you can take some of a piece of it with some roots and put it elsewhere.
Yeah, it usually wants to spread pretty easily.
Yeah.
All right, an email from Emily, and then we'll hit the phones, 800-348-2551. Emily writes, I have two questions. All right, Emily. I gave James three. I'll give you two. Emily writes, any reason why black or honey locust trees would not bloom? Does it stop as it ages, or does it need a partner to do so?
Well, the honey locust typically doesn't have the same kind of bloom as the black locust. Right.
The black locust is the fragrant white flower, very showy, and I don't think they've quite bloomed yet. I think they're coming
it's a
soon.
Early. Yeah.
And honey locust, it blooms, but it's green. You hardly notice.
Not something you'd call a flower, hardly. Right. Yeah.
Along the same lines, writes Emily, does mock orange need a partner to bloom?
No. In general, if a plant requires a partner, it requires a partner for pollination.
Like
male and female can be on different flowers, different plants, but they don't require that to bloom per se.
Okay, because Emily says, we've had one for maybe 11 years, never a single bloom. We prune, fertilize, it gets sun, nothing.
Well, something else going on there.
Yeah, many years ago, the availability of mock orange seemed to be limited to a few varieties, and some of them did have a hard time setting a flower, I remember. I mean, we're talking 25 years ago. I know I don't look that old. Right,
no, not at all.
I just wanted to say.
Usually what we recommend for that is to root prune it. Stick a shovel in the ground around the plant, cut some of the roots, and that in essence stresses it. And sometimes if a plant is stressed, in an evolutionary sense, it wants to go to seed to preserve the species.
Interesting.
So you scare it a little bit, basically.
And then she mentioned pruning, or he, I can't remember. Mm. And if they're pruning late, so if they're pruning in July or August or, say, September, that is negatively affecting the potential for bloom because the bloom set is on
they're taking
off
the flower buds. Yeah.
Right.
It's Gardening Today. Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery join us today. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number here on Vox Pop. And let's grab a call or two before our first break. Chris in Athens. Chris, you're on.
Thank you. Does aging treated wood that is in contact with the soil either spoil water, eventually water resources in the soil, or does it spoil the soil so it affects gardening? That's aging treated wood.
Gotcha.
I know the newer pressure treated woods are using, something that is not toxic. The metals they used in the older wood certainly was. It's always been recommended if you are using wood as a source for to build raised beds, you know, to put your garden into, not to use pressure treated wood, even the newer material, because I'm sure there is some kind of leachate that you'd have to deal with. So using things like locust or black locust in this case, or larch or cedar or hemlock are usually preferred.
Yeah. Yeah, untreated, right.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah.
Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Now we go to Bradley in Great Barrington. Bradley.
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
The oak trees on Monument Valley Road in Great Barrington seem to be being devoured by gypsy moss. There's about 75% of the leaves are gone, it seems like. I was wondering, and they're also eating my peach trees, but not viciously, and even the hemlocks that I just planted, about four of them, constantly pulling them off. I'm worried about, will the oak trees get permanently damaged? That's my question.
Okay.
I would say to be a little more concerned with the hemlock and possibly the peach tree. You know, hemlock is an evergreen, and it'll have a much harder time rejuvenating the growth that it needs to do, especially a newly planted one. So I would definitely focus on the hemlock. If the peach tree is not looking too, you know, too eaten, I guess, as you said, I wouldn't worry about it. And yeah, the oaks will all recover. You know, gypsy moth has cycled through, you know, northeast for sure, North America, for 40 or 50 years, at least, probably longer than that. And this is the year for, the southern Berkshires seem to be have
and
a pretty good
infection. There's peaks and valleys in that population, right, too. I mean, is it 10 years or 11 years?
They always say 9 or 10 years. It kind of cycles. Yeah, so we may see some
is
of it again.
Is there a second growth this season of oak leaves out of curiosity?
Correct, yeah. Yes. The oak leaves will re-leaf. So my general recommendation is that, you know, by the time we get to the end of July, you will maybe have forgotten about the gypsy moth because
Bradley,
the oak leaves will have leafed out.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll take a quick break here. Bob Graves and Greg Ward join us on this gardening edition of Vox Pop. It's 800-348-2551 if you want to call in. We'll be back. Bit of Ronnie Earl for you here on Vox Pop. It's the gardening show. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery and Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery join us today to answer your questions. And dovetailing with our past caller, this is from Frank in Sharon, Connecticut. Said, for the past several weeks, we've been overrun by caterpillars. They've stripped the oaks of their leaves. They're now working on pines and fruit trees. The chemical BT is banned here in Connecticut. What to do?
Well,
there's other chemicals are organic.
Yes, the spinosad is an organic insecticide. Usually the company uses a brand called Captain Jack's, I think, is the most popular one out there. And that's pretty effective on most insects, including caterpillars.
Mm. And BT is still available in New York.
And Massachusetts.
And Massachusetts, yeah.
Let's go to the phones once again, 800-348-2551. Beth in Alford. Beth, you're on.
Hi, it's Beth, B-E-S-S. So
oh, Beth, I'm sorry.
I have a question about, that's all right. It's hard to hear on the phone, and
no,
thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, I blame the screener, but go ahead.
I've got a question and a half about mulch for veggie beds. My husband doesn't like straw or hay as a mulch. He doesn't like the way it looks, and we've also found mice in there making homes. So I'm wondering what are good alternate mulches. I know there's buckwheat hulls, and they can get kind of pricey. We have a lot of raised veggie beds. But what else could be used?
Well, you can use any of the bark mulches if you want, but any cellulose product tends to, as it breaks down, robs nitrogen a little bit, so you have to be careful as to how much you put down. I mean, some people use cardboard and newspaper. You know, farmers use black plastic. There are also fabric, paper, biodegradable type mulches that you could use. Some people use grass clippings.
Yep. You can use compost, you know, in and of itself. You can just if you have compost, you put applying that as as a mulch will work. If you use the wood mulches, which will work fine, just remember to pull them off the garden. And you would have maybe done this with the straw anyway. Pull, you know, so you could put wood mulches around your tomato plants, and then just kind of, you know, be effectively cleaning them off into a pile so that when you know, they don't work into the soil. It's just, you just don't want all of that wood going into the soil over the course of a couple of years. Whereas, this, you know,
okay,
some of the straw.
Okay, so the grass.
Oh, go ahead.
Yes, go ahead.
No, well,
so,
you know,
so I can collect my grass clippings when we mow the lawn, let them go brown, and then use them?
Sure, as long as you're not using any
grass
chemicals.
Grass seeds in the beds?
Do you hear that, Bess?
As long as you don't use any chemicals, and you're going to hopefully mow it before the grass seeds. You know, you would never use hay because you're going to end up with a hay field because that's got all kinds of seeds in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then, good. And then a related question. It's sort of a hangover from the previous owner. We have a lot of bags of black mulch. Would those not be good to use in the veggie garden because they have dye in them?
Yeah, if you're trying to, you know, have a fairly organic garden, it's probably not a good idea.
Okay, just stick with them on the ornamentals.
Yeah, sure. All right, Bess, thanks for the call.
Okay.
See ya. Appreciate it very much. Now we go to Nancy in Glenmont. Hello, Nancy.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, we're here.
Me too.
Okay, I have a question about floribunda roses. So they're in bloom now, and they bloom in a clump. Like there's like three or four of them together, and then when you try and deadhead them, you know, one of them falls apart, and the other ones, you know, are still blooming. So when do you cut them? When do you deadhead them? And then how far down do you go? Because if you cut off each bloom, you have like three prongs sticking out of a stem. And I have done some deadheading, but I don't see any like new growth coming in to try and replace the ones that I've cut.
Yeah, so I know just what you're talking about, because there you are. You're going to tidy up your roses, and you've got two or three buds that are just opening up and two or three that have finished. And you get in there and you prune them all up, and it still doesn't look quite right, maybe. So what I like to do is just sort of, yeah, just, you know, maybe go in there and just pinch out a few of the buds when you're going by. But when it's mostly done, and you may have to sacrifice a couple of buds, bring it all the way down. So prune more severely. Take, you know, there's a leaf count, 3, 5, 7 leaflets down, you can make a cut. But by reducing the plant, you know, significantly, a third or so, it will rejuvenate from, obviously, from below that, and you'll have that big show you had last week or the week before when your rose was just looking perfect will happen again in July. So there'll be this green time, this time when there's no color for a little bit.
Go ahead, Nancy.
Okay, so there's like three blooms, and then there's like three stalks attached to a larger, a longer stalk. So you go down that stalk, you said like a third of the way?
Yeah, at least a third of that big, heavy stalk.
And then...
Yeah, just take that.
Okay.
Take that. And a lot of times what I'm doing is I don't have time to go through and do all the little ones, so I just go back down at the beginning and cut it off because it's quicker.
All right, Nancy.
I got it. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the call. It's gardening today on the program, if you haven't figured that out. Bob Graves is here. Greg Ward is here. And Ian is in Queensbury. Ian, you're on.
Yeah. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hi. I have a question. It seems so easy when you look it up, but an avocado pit.
Yeah.
Take a couple of toothpicks in it, put it on top of a cup, fill it with water so it's about halfway up, and it's supposed to start rooting. Well, I'm 0-for-5, so...
Oh, boy.
What am I doing wrong, or is it really impossible?
Oh, dear. So, thanks, Bob.
you got that one.
So, to be honest, I've never done that, but I have seen my wife do it with it, because she was a school teacher many years ago, and several people over the years have come in with their avocados. So most people are successful. The only thing I can think of is how much you're submerging it. I think halfway, about half of the pit should be submerged, and obviously the other half should not. And that's all the advice I can offer.
You know,
I looked it up on the internet, so it must be true, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Other than the novelty of it, I'm not quite sure why anybody wants to do it.
Go buy some avocados.
I mean, these things grow out in the fields in Mexico. It's very hard to get it to grow up here because we just don't have the weather and the
just for the novelty of having an avocado plant going.
Just for the novelty. I got you.
I think you should try again. Yep. I mean,
gardener, and she says she's tried it and has no success either. So
All right, man.
I'm about to shoot these. I mean, and I change the water every time, every day.
Yeah.
You know, give flush the water, you know, and nothing.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I tell you what, if you have success in coming years, call us back and let us know. In the meantime, we'll do some research and we'll see if we can get an answer for you. Ian, thanks a lot. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop. It's gardening. And we have gardeners in the studio. I'm not sure how pleased they are to be here, but they're here all the same. David in New Paltz. David, you're on.
Yes. Thank you for the show, Ray.
Thank you.
I am a sculptor, and I'm making different shapes, like trellises, to go into my garden. Some of it is going into a tomato garden, and I'm thinking of making shapes in geometric forms to be like a trellis. Mm. And also, the material that I'm using is copper PVC pipe instead of wood. Am I in trouble?
In what regard? What is your question? Is the material?
I mean, can you use copper PVC pipe in an organic garden?
Aha!
I think the PVC pipe would be fine. That's inert.
Yeah, certainly not going to hurt.
Not going to hurt
anything. And copper, you know. A copper trellis can work, but, you know, metal has obviously some copper leachate would occur over time. So if it stayed there for quite a while, that can cause some issues, you know, because that will build up in the soil potentially. But plants touching metal, the vining, it doesn't always work out well. The metal gets a little too hot. So that's why wood or the plastic would probably be better. You'd have better adherence.
And what kind of plants, like perennials, for a permanent structure should I use? I was thinking roses or maybe grapevines.
Well, the determination of that's going to be how much sun you have. You know, if you had the morning sun, you could do clematis. Grapevines you could do if you're in full sun, certainly roses in full sun, but it's really a question of what your conditions are more than the trellis itself.
And then, you know, honeysuckle, hydrangea, trumpet vine, all available out there, wisteria.
Wisteria. Some of those might get a little overwhelming depending upon the size of the trellis.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
David, thanks a lot for the call. It's Gardening Today with Greg Ward at Bob Graves, and Tam is in Del Mar. Tam, you're on.
Hi. After putting it off for like 6 years, I very unhappily resorted to using pesticides on my lawn this year.
Okay.
And I was wondering if you could talk to me about tree emergent, and is corn gluten one of those, and is corn gluten a useful way to go in the future?
Yeah. Corn gluten, it was discovered, I think, by Iowa State that corn gluten has some pre-emergent properties. And it's basically part of, you know, when they produce corn, they get the corn gluten out of it. It comes from corn itself. It has some pre-emergent properties. It has to be used multiple times, multiple years. I spoke to Frank Rossi at Cornell about it years ago, and he said, yeah, you know, it's better than nothing, but it doesn't really work all that well. But if you're going organic and you're looking for a pre-emergent, it's the only option you have.
And when do you, a pre-emergent you would put on, like in March?
Yeah, I'd wait a little later than that because they have a limited lifespan.
Typically in the spring, you're having, you know, you're applying the pre-emergent before the seeds start to germinate, right? And that typically in our area is mid-late April. You know, so we often suggest that when the forsythia is in bloom, you should have put down your pre-emergent. That would be the ideal timing.
And do you suggest any other organic way to control weeds? My yard is full of them if I don't use pesticides.
Well, I think we both agree that the best way to manage weeds is to have a really good soil base to begin with. Use organic fertilizers, fertilize on a regular basis, leave your clippings high, cut your lawn at 3.5 inches, water when it needs it, not when it doesn't. Check your pH to make sure your pH is good. You're looking to produce a good crop of grass, which helps to outcompete the weeds. It's really one of the basic ways of organic lawn growing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tam. It's the Gardening Show on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. Teresa is in Stillwater. Teresa.
Good afternoon. I have a 6-foot fig tree that I bring into my sunroom in the winter and take out in the summer. And I've had it, maybe 5 years. It was given to me as a gift, so I didn't grow up with it. But for some reason, I don't know what happened over this winter. I have no leaves. I brought it outside well after freezing, so that wasn't the problem. But I could see no budding, no evidence of budding, and I'd scratch the bark, and I'd look for a little green underneath.
Yeah.
And so there's no leaves on it now. But the interesting thing, and here's my question, it has started to sprout from the bottom. They seem to be prolific bottom sprouters. I propagated one fig tree from it already. But I'm wondering, how long should I wait till I cut off the dead stalk that's, 5-6 feet?
Yeah. I think you've made the determination. It is dead, and so you can now prune it off. If it's not green, it's not going to sprout. So, yes, go ahead and prune it. And, you have all these choices at the base. Pick one or three, whatever you like to do. Prune out the rest and allow them to regrow into a more tree-form shape, and you'll have it again pretty soon.
Now, I have a question, Greg.
So then...
Doesn't that require a dormancy? If she's bringing it into a sunroom where it's warm in the wintertime, wouldn't it be happier if it was somewhere it was a little colder?
I have found when we've wintered, figs, that they kind of do it themselves, where it, maybe it's, 55 degrees instead of 70 degrees as a household, but they will go into January. Whether you water them a lot or not, will drop their leaves for some period of time, about a month, usually maybe 5 weeks, and then leaf out again, usually in March most of the time. And so it goes into the spring in full leaf. You wait for the warm weather and you put it out. So yours didn't do that. Yours maybe got too cold in the fall. It had some kind of damage before you brought it in. I'm not sure, of course, the timing of that. And so it was leafless all winter, and you assumed it was dormant, but it was actually had been damaged.
Did I do it any harm by watering it too much? I've done this. I've had it 3-4 years or so, and the pattern was the same. Yeah. And that's why, and it does lose its leaves in the winter in the sunroom.
Yeah.
And I would water it maybe once a week, but not a lot, just enough, thinking in my mind, just enough for it to stay alive. That's go completely dry.
Yeah. So if it
and
went
it
in,
always,
yeah. If it went into your house and was in leaf and then dropped its leaves in January, you watered it a little bit and then it never leafed out again.
Something happened.
Probably, yeah. It may have even gotten too dry. We can't say.
Okay.
Too dry, too cold, too wet. Those are the three.
Well, thank you, Teresa, for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's grab one more before our next break. Ruth in Saugerties. Hello there, Ruth. You're on.
Hello. I have a couple of squirrely questions.
I'm sorry?
I have an apricot tree, two apricot trees with lots of fruit, which makes my squirrels out, the squirrels, very, 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 very happy.
Yes.
So a few years ago, I got 100 apricots. Wow. Last year, zero.
Wow.
But the squirrels were really nice and plump. last year I went and I covered them. I covered the apricots, not the squirrels, in semi-sheer curtains. I tied them around each little cluster of apricots.
Oh, my.
And the squirrels just threw that off.
Sure. Oh, boy.
After I...
So you're wondering what to do about the squirrels?
Well, I'm wondering if you have any idea. And also, kind of an adjunct question is, Would it work to feed the squirrels? Will they leave the apricots alone if they're happy? No.
Why don't you eat the squirrels, Ruth? Then they'll be gone.
Easy,
no?
Easy.
All right, fair enough.
If you feed the squirrels, you will only get more squirrels. That's so dumb.
Okay, because I had heard they were territorial and wouldn't allow other squirrels in.
They're gonna like the apricots more than whatever you feed them.
Oh, boy.
I lived across the street from a doctor when I was a kid, and he had great big fruit trees, and he literally built cages. And he enclosed them in cages so that he could get the fruit. It was a monstrous thing that he made out of 2x4s and wire.
Wow.
And it kept the squirrels out. But squirrels are really hard to keep
alive. Are you handy with a hammer, Ruth?
I do think that, covering the entire tree for the duration of ripening would be the way to go. So maybe getting something that's a little sturdier, but, some of the netting that is available for blueberries or something, and wrapping the tree. I assume these trees aren't too big.
No, but they're against. I was, what is the word for bogarting them? Right against the porch, so they can. That was my initial idea, right? But which makes it much happier for the squirrels because they can just hop on the porch railing.
Yeah,
there's a material called a floating row cover. And it can be a little delicate, so you have to be careful with it. It's usually used on the ground for crops to keep bugs or the soil warm, et cetera. And you could consider wrapping the plant in that because that will let the air and water through and let the fruit ripe. And it may discourage them because it's usually white and they may not understand there's any fruit in there.
Ruth, thanks for the call and great use of the word bogarting. Don't bogart that squirrel. I think that was the new Riders of the Purple Sage. We'll be back. 800-348-2551. Bob Graves and Greg Ward, gardening. Vox Pop on WAMC, gardening today in a rollicking edition here with Greg Ward and Bob Graves. And you can join us when you hear somebody hang up, give a call. We'll do the best we can. This email from Allison: we have a potted braided hibiscus that we've had since mid-May. The issue is that in the past 2 weeks, a lot of the leaves are dying and falling off. It has been inside since we got it. I spritz the leaves every day and water it when the soil is no longer moist. There are still flower buds, and they bloom beautifully and last about a day each. There's also some new leaf growth, but why are the leaves dying off? The plant is really thinning out, and I'm worried it won't survive.
With hibiscus, they need a lot of water. And number one, she wants to get it outside because it'll do much better in the shade outside. But if those leaves are turning yellow and falling off, and particularly on the inside, it got dry. And it can get dry once, and it'll do that for 3 weeks.
Okay.
So may have to water a little more.
Yeah, so definitely put it outside. In a not too sunny spot, and it will recover.
And Peter writes, we would like to acknowledge that this is pollinator week, June 21st through 27th. Mm-hmm. Maybe suggest folks can plant for pollinators native plants. Cultivars can sometimes not be beneficial or accessible for nectar and pollen. Incorporate flowering plants into lawns, embrace clover and dandelions, and limit pesticide use. And that is from Peter. From the Pollinators documentary project.
Yeah, that's great.
That's very good advice. This one's from Brian. Brian writes, what's the deal with keeping garden seeds year to year? I keep the packet sealed, dry, and cool, but seem to have poor germination. Is it best not to keep them for more than 2 years?
Yep. Yes.
Really? Why?
Absolutely. They deteriorate. They just don't last.
Go ahead.
Well, you could put them in the fridge. That would be the first thing. If he closes them up, put them in the fridge. That will extend their life like anything. But, the seeds wear out. And so using them the second year is usually pretty good. The third year
no.
That is so hilarious. We found over the winter like a whole bag of seed pouches that had to be when we bought the house 20 years ago. Miraculously, none of them have worked at all. So now I understand why. All right, back to the phones, and let's see here. It looks like Lynn in Shelburne Falls. Lynn, you're on.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about, first of all, a previous caller talked about trumpet vine, and I don't know how many versions of trumpet vine there are, but I have to really caution him against planting it. It's very intrusive.
Yeah, it is.
And, I mean, it's just terrible. So just watch out where you plant it.
Okay.
Now, my question is about a hosta that I have. I have an additional question, but I have a big leafed hosta. When can I replant that or transplant it? Or
you want to move the whole thing or you want to divide it up?
I don't think it's big enough to divide up. I don't know.
Yeah, so if you're going to move the whole thing, you could do that today. I mean, you know, it's spiking. It's probably going to bloom shortly. And there might be some stress, but the today's weather is perfect for that. So you would just dig around.
One other
it
question
and
I had.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
No.
I have another question. Just rhododendron that I took a piece of a purple rhododendron, and I moved it down into a bottom part of the yard where the sun is a little bit less. And it bloomed pink.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you might have something valuable.
There you go.
Could be your own selection.
Well, we already dug up the other one.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, that's unusual. They don't usually, basically what you did there is you took an asexual cutting. I mean, it's asexual reproduction. The genetics should be identical.
It's possible.
Right.
When you saw it, it was in a later stage of bloom. Like, the rhododendron flowers do fade.
I saw it right from the beginning. Beginning.
Yeah. Well, that's very exciting. Yeah. That's great.
I just thought it was weird, and I was wondering if you had any answers for that.
No,
I guess you stumped the band, Lynn. But thanks for the call. And now we go over to Michael in Latham. Michael, you're on.
Oh, hi. I have a question about a lilac bush. It's 20 years old or more.
Yeah.
A lot of green, but no, very few buds. And it's in a semi-shady area.
Yeah, there you go. That's the problem. Almost
it needs
always.
Full sun, like it,
when somebody says to me, I got a lilac, it's growing, it's not blooming very well. And then I say, is it in full sun? And they go, well. And so the answer is, it's too much shade.
So I got to move it or tear down a fence.
Yep, absolutely.
Or something. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Michael. We appreciate the call. Gardening Today with Greg Ward at Bob Graves. And let's go to lovely Sharon, Connecticut. John, you're on.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Can you hear me?
Sure. Go ahead.
I've got a question about cover crops. I planted a ryegrass back in the fall, and it came up very well in the spring. It started in the fall. And I covered it earlier this spring with cardboard, boxes and that kind of thing, and a tarp on top of that early in the spring. Thought I had it under control, uncovered everything. It looked like it was dead. And I planted butternut squash in a certain area. And now the ryegrass is coming up along with the butternut squash all over. So what did I do wrong and what can I do now so I can have a decent butternut squash crop?
It could be the rye. It could be a different grass. Could just be something else that's germinated. Usually the rye is, by now, is
I bought it at a garden store.
Yeah. The winter rye, if that's what you used, is usually looking faded and sort of blue. And so I'm just suggesting that if you're getting new sprouts, new seedling sprouts, it may be a different grass.
And what farmers typically do with that, too, is they're going to till that in. They're not going to just, you may be used to new.
I did that early in the spring.
Yeah, okay. In terms of your plant now, basically, if you can't pull it out, there's not much else you're going to do about it.
Hoeing it, so you're going to loosen up the soil, take up as much as you can. You can do a mulch. You can do a straw. Laying down a fairly thick layer of straw over that area will really compete well with whatever is sprouting, and then your squash will run over the straw, and you should be pretty well set.
Well, the problem is that they're all there growing at the same pace, and if I try to cover it with straw, I'm going to be covering the sprouts of the butternut squash.
Yeah.
I disagree. The squash is going to run like a vine over the surface of the ground, and so you're going to cultivate. There'll be some patches you have to get down on your hands and knees right next to each squash plant, but you're going to cultivate everything that's half a foot or more away with your whatever implement of destruction you like to use.
Okay.
Put down the straw you know, work it under gently any of the vines that might be, you know, 8 or 10 inches long or more. Mm-hmm. If they're more, that's pretty good. You're doing great. And then it will just run over the straw. Yeah, some things might sprout out of there, but by then the squash should be pretty pretty well set to take over.
Take over, great. Yeah.
All right, John, thanks a lot for the call, and let's see here. And we now go to Burnt Hills and Paul. Paul.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I have a question about flowering dogwood. I live in Burnt Hills. I planted it in my yard 3 years ago. I didn't expect to see any blooms because it was post-bloom time for it, but I haven't had any blooms the last 2 years. Question one is, was it a mistake to try to do a dogwood, a flowering dogwood in Burnt Hills? Number two is that it's a situation for fertilizer. Do you have a recommendation for what I should do for fertilizing it?
Okay, well, I'm very familiar with Burnt Hills. I live very near there. You can grow a dogwood there. The question is, what kind of dogwood did you plant? Do you know what type it was?
A coosa?
It was a coosa. Okay. Coosa blooms later than other dogwoods. It's actually blooming now or maybe a little bit before this. It's a very reliable bloomer. You know, if it's only been in there a couple, 3 years, it may just not be blooming all that much yet. I would be patient and not worry about it. If the leaves look good and the plant looks healthy, you're fine. They like a little bit of shade, but they'll take a lot of sun too. But there's no problem growing a coosa where you are.
And adding a little fertilizer, yep, even now would not hurt and would probably help set it up for a better bloom next year. Yeah.
Is it something I should do like a planting tablet type fertilizer that's a little more slow release? Or
no,
water in?
I don't like the tablets because if you get it too concentrated to the roots, you can burn it. I just like a granular, an organic granular you sprinkle on the surface. It seems too easy, but it works great.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Okay. Thank you so much for your help.
Thanks, Paul. Good luck. And to Chestertown, Linda, you're on.
Hi. I have my property backs up on a wooded area, and our next door neighbor has a very ugly shed. I'm looking for a bush or shrub thing I can plant next to it to shield us from having to look at that.
Oh, God, the age-old problem.
We get that question a lot, yeah, don't we, Greg?
We do.
All my neighbors say the same thing, oddly enough. All right, so who's got an answer for Linda?
So did we get an exposure?
Yeah.
I missed that part.
Sun or shade?
It's very shady.
Okay, that limits you.
So if you don't mind screening it very well just for the summertime, or, you know, warm weather, then lots of, you know, leafy deciduous things could work. Several viburnums would work. A thing called witch hazel, a nice native plant, would work quite well.
If you need an evergreen, hemlock's about the only option you've got that's going to give you any size over any period of time, and they've been a little hard to come by this year. We were talking about that earlier.
Why is that?
It's just the availability of them is down because of demand, we think. But the deciduous ones are going to give it to you quicker. They just won't give it to you in the wintertime.
But it'll happen more rapidly with the deciduous things. It'll you'll get the coverage you want, and then, you know, just look the other way in the wintertime.
All right, thank you for the suggestion.
Okay. Well,
thanks, Linda. Sorry for that one. And now to Ann in West Stockbridge. Ann, you're on.
Oh, hi. Well, one thing, somebody was just talking about the dogwood. I used Neptune Harvest on mine, which are relatively young trees. This year, they are just bright with the flowers. They're just loaded.
Yep, that's a good organic fertilizer.
Year.
Yep.
Yeah, Neptune Harvest.
But also, people were talking earlier about the lawn. You know, everybody's sort of got to have this grass growing. And, you know, I used to live in town. I had a yard that was full. It was all pretty much weeds, but they were green. Mm-hmm. And people used to always say to me, oh, what do you do? You know, how do you keep your grass so green? And, the guy across the street from me had people over there spraying all the time. And I just want, you know, people really have to try to think, a few times over before they use herbicides and pesticides on anything, because, you know, look right now, we've got COVID, we've got these caterpillars, the gypsy moth caterpillars. Mm-hmm. These things are all, you know, related to climate. And we just use way too many pesticides. So my lawn, I moved. My lawn now is, again, weeds and thyme. And it's not creeping thyme. It's the culinary thyme. Yeah. I literally go out and I get thyme from my lawn.
Nice.
When I'm making a sauce. And I don't know why it's, I didn't plant it. It's been here. But it's starting to become my whole lawn. That and dandelions, which is great.
Yeah.
So I really encourage people not to use, and not, you know, with the gypsy moths,
yeah.
There's people are spraying the moths, you know, spraying their trees. The trees, from what I understand, if you have a healthy tree, the gypsy moths, it'll look ratty maybe for the year, maybe two, but you don't need to spray. And when you do spray, you're going to, you know, birds eat the caterpillars. Hmm. You're going to be killing a lot more than just the caterpillars. So
okay. Well, Annie, thank you for that one. Annie.
Yeah, you know, I think she's really right about gypsy moth. Gypsy moth has one life cycle. It will be over by midsummer, and really a distant memory for the rest of this year. They may come back again. If you have a small little plant you just put in your yard and it's getting overwhelmed, you can pick them off. There are very simple ways to get rid of they're not that hard to do it. My lawn has got lots of green, but I'm not sure how much grass it has.
Yeah, you know, it's fine, right? Yeah. Who complains? Well, besides almost everyone but me. Yes, actually. All right, everyone complains. Anne in Highland. Anne, you're on. Hello? Hello? Hello, Anne.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
Well, I'm sorry, 1 minute, please.
Oh, that's fine. Sure. Yeah, so we have a minute left, but go ahead.
I just have a question. I heard you talking earlier about if there was mulch on, not turning it into your garden. Why is that?
Because it's a cellulose robs nitrogen from the soil. It doesn't do a lot to add to the quality of the soil. So if it's a bark mulch, I mean, there's other types of mulch, compost and things like that are okay, but bark mulch itself is doesn't contribute to the soil.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. If it's bark from a
So usually the bark mulches or wood mulches are used as a permanent mulch or semi-permanent for you know, you put it down and you're not going to do a lot of cultivating in that garden again. You are pretty well set. The shrub border, maybe a well-established perennial border if you like that. But your vegetable garden, you're always going to be in there replanting, doing things, and it's really easy to kind of accidentally incorporate that wood and that bark into the soil. And if you do that 1 year, it's not a big deal. But if you do it over the course of several years, working in too much wood into the soil can degrade the soil a little bit, or at least the nutrients in the soil. So we're just suggesting, if you use it, that you rake it off before you do that cultivating work.
All right, Ann, thank you so much for the call. All right, Greg Ward, how do people find Fatigans in person and on the web?
Fatigans.
Oh, no, no.
I know it's in Leith.
Wait a minute. This is not a quiz. I'm at Ward's.
You got to excuse him, folks. He's not used to this live show.
No, it's great.
If you followed me in a car, I could get you there.
Nice. Greg, why don't you just give us your website, and then we'll move on.
So Ward's Nursery, 600 South Main Street, Great Barrington, wardsnursery.com.
And you know, Bob Graves, you're the guy from Fatigans. Where the heck are you?
We're on Troy Schenectady Road, very near the Albany Airport, and our website is fatigans.com.
Well, this was great. Guys, thank you for coming to the show today. Maybe we'll see you again. Maybe we won't.
Maybe not. Who knows?
Support comes from the Hyde Collection, now featuring Summer Bomb Pop, a collection of contemporary abstract paintings from the Tank Teaching Museum with works from the Hyde's Phoebes and Schmidt Collection, hydecollection.org. Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales service and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the Greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. And the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, protecting the forests, wetlands, shorelines, and ridges that protect Lake George permanently. Projects, events, and news at LGLC.com. .org, I should say. That's lglc.org. And Godfrey Financial Associates, Glenmont, a woman-owned and operated wealth management firm offering financial planning, investment management, and insurance, adhering to fiduciary standards since 1995. GodfreyFinancial.com. Once again, thanks to Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach, the engineer. Ed Rosen took the calls. Tomorrow, it's Home Improvement with Darren Tracy. Stand by now for The Book Show.